For more than 2 years, the United States has not had an ambassador in Australia, a close ally, nor are there U.S. ambassadors in places where Washington has more contentious relationships, including Saudi Arabia, Mexico, and Turkey. Many diplomats say the record high number of ambassador vacancies is damaging American foreign policy. Nicholas Burns of Harvard's Kennedy School of Government is a former high-level State Department official and ambassador to Greece and to NATO. Hi, Professor.
Hello.
If there is no confirmed ambassador in a given country, and there are many countries, as we said, where there is no U.S. ambassador, how does that hinder, if at all, U.S. presence there and U.S. clout there?
Well, it damages the United States, and it limits what we can do, because in most countries of the world, the American ambassador is the one person who can call the prime minister or the defense minister of that country or the king or queen, whatever the system of government is, to get something done on behalf of the United States. And a very good example of how we were limited by this absence of ambassadors overseas was the Jamal Khashoggi affair back in October and November when he went missing. The United States had no American ambassador in Ankara in Turkey, and we did not have an ambassador and still don't have an ambassador in Riyadh in Saudi Arabia. The Saudis wouldn't see any American officials at a high level, below the level of ambassador. And so we were very much constricted in our ability to communicate with these governments and to be persuasive with them and to be insistent with them on the Khashoggi affair. So that's a practical example of what happens when an administration like this administration doesn't care to appoint ambassadors on a timely basis.
Well, I want to talk about the doesn't care part in just a second, but when it comes down to it, it doesn't mean that the United States has lost all presence in a particular country, because there is a huge network of officials and people who work for consulates or embassies who are still functioning, lower-level officials, yes, but they are still running things just below the surface. I mean, that's right. Of some consequence.
Oh, it definitely is. You know, the United States Foreign Service are the people who staff our career men and women, staff our embassies and consulates worldwide. They are first rate. They're skilled. They're experienced. They're at all levels, junior officers, mid-level officers, senior officers, and they carry out the work that the American people need them to do. They help American citizens in distress. They negotiate trade agreements. They work with countries, for instance, on counter-terror policies. But in the final analysis, you do want to have that ambassador in place, because that's the senior woman or the senior man who represents the president and secretary of state personally. Roughly about 70% of our ambassadors are career foreign service officer ambassadors. About 30% are politically appointed members of the president's political party. That hasn't changed very much since the Kennedy administration. So you have this apparatus in embassies and consulates, but you do need that person at the top. And the Khashoggi affair was a dramatic representation of that.
What's the on-the-ground experience for people who work in these embassies or consular offices when there is no ambassador? I mean, they know their jobs. They know what they're doing. What's the daily effect?
They can get the majority of their work done. But in a crisis, in a war situation or a conflict resolution, or an American citizen's been jailed unfairly, which has happened this week in Russia, where the Russians have taken an American prisoner, I think in retribution for the fact that Maria Butina has been arrested in the United States, and some people believe she might be a Russian spy, that has to be determined in court. But in this kind of case, you do need an American ambassador. Luckily, we have an American ambassador, a very good ambassador, Ambassador John Huntsman in Moscow. He can intervene directly at the highest levels of the Russian government. That's what we did not have in Riyadh, in Saudi Arabia, in Ankara, in Turkey. We don't have an American ambassador in South Africa. We do not have an American ambassador in Pakistan. And there are countless countries around the world now where we have a historically high level of vacancies, and that's because the Trump administration has been so slow in appointing ambassadors.
So in the areas where, and you just mentioned many of them, where the roles have not been filled, they're simply a vacancy. The president hasn't nominated anybody. You can't read the president's mind, but does it serve his political purpose at all to leave these ambassadorships open?
I think it's inattention by the president, failure to understand the importance of diplomacy. President Trump has never spoken up in support of American diplomacy. In fact, he's tried to cut the State Department budget by 31% over the last 2 years, 2 years running. And he, of all modern presidents in the last half century, has appointed the fewest ambassadors. And so I think that does tell you the value to which that he ascribes to ambassadors. He also has, to my knowledge, has not appointed a single African-American woman. The great majority of his appointees are white men, people like me, but not people of color, not women. And at least in the Obama administration, when Secretary Hillary Clinton was in place, Secretary John Kerry, there was a big emphasis, as there was when Secretary Condi Rice was in office, to appoint people, to appoint a greater number of women and people of color, because we want our ambassadors to look like and represent the entire United States, not just one part of it.
We should say there are countries where he has indeed nominated people for ambassadorship, such as Saudi Arabia and Yemen, but the Senate has not acted on the nomination. And the president tweeted about this on New Year's Eve. He blamed Democrats for what he called record delays in approving ambassadors. And he wrote, heads of countries are calling, wanting to know why Senator Schumer is not approving their otherwise approved ambassadors. Republicans control the Senate, but how much are Senate Democrats to blame here?
Well, I think historically both parties, both Democrats and Republicans, have tended sometimes to hold these ambassadorial and other senior appointments. They've held the appointments. They've blocked them until they get what they want on some unrelated issue, some unrelated bill. So both parties have been guilty of that, and there's too much of it, and it does stall the appointment of senior officials. So I think it's fair to say that Congress should do its part. Now, ambassadors only need to be confirmed by the Senate by 50 votes. The Republicans still have the majority in the U.S. Senate, and so the majority leader, Mitch McConnell, ought to be able to push these ambassadorial nominations through. But I do think it's fair to say that both political parties need to make a stronger effort to get these ambassadorial positions filled by the Senate of the United States.
Yeah, and we haven't talked at all about some of the international positions, ambassadorships to UNESCO and United Nations positions. We do know that President Trump has chosen former Fox News anchor and current State Department spokeswoman Heather Nauert to replace Nikki Haley as the next UN ambassador. I wonder if you can tell us what you think her charge should be as UN ambassador and what you think of the choice.
Well, I certainly wish her well. We should want our ambassador to succeed. This is going to be a big challenge because the people who are sent to the Security Council, to the United Nations by other countries, are the very top career diplomats that Russia and China and France and Germany have. And she's going to have to go toe-to-toe with the Russians and Chinese every day on the most difficult, sometimes most arcane issues. It requires a lot of experience. If you think about some of the people we've had in that role, Daniel Patrick Moynihan, Jean Kirkpatrick, Adlai Stevenson, who ran for president twice, Samantha Power, Susan Rice more recently, these are people whose entire careers have been devoted to foreign and defense policy. They're experts. Heather Nauert, whom I do not know, but I have a lot of respect for, hasn't had that type of experience. So it's going to be a steep learning curve. She will be assisted by the career foreign service officers on her staff, and that'll be a great advantage to her. And I assume that she'll be looking to them for advice as well.
One final question on this. The number of ambassadorships in general that are open is so surprising, but is it alarming?
To me, it's alarming, but I'm highly subjective. I'm a former career foreign service officer. The United States is still, by a long margin, the most powerful country in the world. But we say what we do, where we are, where we involve ourselves is central to the fate of the rest of the world. And so we need these ambassadors in place. We need them to be working every day. And I think it is just a travesty that the Trump administration has been so slow, 2 years now, in appointing people to these offices. And I think it does tell us a lot about how President Trump sees diplomacy. He doesn't value it. He doesn't practice it very carefully himself. And increasingly, the United States and our military leaders will be the first to tell you this, we can't fight everybody around the world. We have to be very spare and conservative about the use of military force. We've got to depend more on diplomacy. Our ambassadors are our frontline people. We need them in place around the world.
Yeah, with the Senate shouldering some of the blame as well.
That's right.
Nick Burns, professor of diplomacy at the Howard Kennedy School of Government, thank you very much.
Thank you, Lisa.